You're listening to the More Time, More Profit podcast, the best place for entrepreneurs who are looking to grow past the startup phase of their business, but still need to learn how to free up more time, drive more profit.
Today's show, we're talking about creating customers and hosts, Adam John and Grant Merrill. My name is Adam John,
and as always, I'm joined by Mr. Grant Merrill. What's going on, Grant?
Not much, buddy. The typically overlooked statistic of how much do customers love you. We usually just care about new sales instead of the value we get from our current customers. So download the framework before we get stuck into this heavy topic, as it's the only way that you learn is by actually implementing it. So go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/058.
So today we're focusing on customer service, and I'm super excited about this as we've never done a show on it before. Everyone loves getting new sales. We celebrate them. Everyone gets rewarded, and we measure our company's success by our ability to bring in new sales into the company. But what are you doing to retain your old clients? It's much easier to generate income from existing customers than it is to go out and drive new leads and new sales from them. Much like accounting, customer service isn't considered sexy, and it is something that many businesses owners could be doing better. But I tell you what is sexy, and that is having clients who rave about your products and services. The ability to cross-sell and upsell clients, having clients who generate referrals for you, who write positive reviews for you, who will be testimonials on your website, and clients who are customers for life. And in this day and age of social media and reviews, the way you treat your customers is out there for the entire world to see. So I can't tell you how important this topic is, and I'm looking forward to shining the spotlight on it. Grant, your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, mate, look, I couldn't agree more. I will never forget a statistic that a business mentor of mine shared with me. If less than 30% of your business comes from referrals, you're doing something wrong. It has stuck with me for my entire business career. Just let that statistic sink in for a bit and play a couple of scenarios out in your head. Remember the last time you went to a really good restaurant? I mean, the one where they remembered your name, got you the good table next to the window, and even brought your significant other a free slice of cake for their birthday. What was the first thing you did? You told your friends about it. You remind your partner about it. You tell their friends, your family, their colleagues. But you also tell your friends, your employees, and your family. It doesn't just stop at one conversation because you have a story to share. You need to let people know how ecstatic you were. But why do so many business owners devalue this free word of mouth marketing? Is it because it's too hard? You feel they have already too many clients? You feel that asking for a testimonial is just enough? Or you blame the customer every time that they don't have a good experience with you? Or is it just because you've never had anybody step you through a simple to follow process that's super easy to implement in your business where you can actually sit there and say, ah, wow, I can't actually believe I didn't think of that. So don't worry, everybody, we've got you covered, and there's no better time than the present to jump right into it.
So today we've got Adam Tolperek on the show. Welcome, Adam.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. So happy to be here.
Adam is an internationally recognized customer service expert, keynote speaker, and frontline trainer who helps organizations get results by thinking differently about customer service. He has extensive experience in retail, wholesale, franchising, and small businesses. He's the author of the book, Be Your Customer's Hero. He hosts a podcast called Crack the Customer Code. And he has a blog called Customers That Stick. And I think you'll be hard-pressed to find anyone with more experience in this field. It's an absolute pleasure having you on the show today, Adam. So tell me about how you got into, fell into, or was pulled into customer services.
I was born into it, believe it or not. I am a third-generation entrepreneur. So my grandfather had a Main Street shoe store. My father had a wholesale musical instrument distributorship. My mom even had a retail clothing store. So I grew up and around small business. And then when I got into my working years, I had multiple different businesses, but eventually ended up in franchising and having retail service businesses. And it was the lessons I brought from my youth and my formal education, bachelor's business administration, master's business administration, all that combined to sort of go into the real world and to see developing as an entrepreneur, developing businesses, developing employees, developing systems, to see what worked and what didn't. And what I came out of that with is that customer experience is everything, and that customer experience has to be the core of whatever business model you have. It doesn't matter what it is. If the customer's not at the center, if you're not customer centric, then you're not going to succeed. You're not going to differentiate. You're not going to stand out from the competition. So those are the lessons I took out of it. And then I sort of morphed that into talking about it.
Beautiful. So what was that aha moment when you realized how important it was? Was it sitting down with your father or your grandfather and saying, this is something you need to focus on? Or was it a natural progression when you had your business and you're just like, this is too important to ignore?
Yeah, it was a progression for sure. There were a few aha, sort of mini aha moments along the way, which we can talk about. But it was absolutely a progression because my father and my mother, they were customer-centric before that term even existed, right? I mean, they were always just customer-focused, do what's right for the customer. You know, there's limits to that, of course, but I grew up having that ethic instilled in me. And then I realized, you know, coming from an MBA program, coming from that command and control, bottom line oriented type of thinking, I had to sort of overcome that as I was in my own business. And when I got into my business and particularly into retail, where I was, you know, managing 50 something people, helping other business owners, I was a regional developer as well. So I was not only managing my own business, but I was coaching and training and teaching other people how to manage theirs. You know, I saw how important some of these sort of soft skills were and these other approaches that aren't just numerical. And one of those, a great example of that would be employee empowerment, which we can talk about.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, after this session and delivering the framework, will everyone listening to this podcast be able to go into the office tomorrow and get a little bit more stickiness on their client base?
Absolutely. You know, we're going to talk through the framework and I'm going to hit a few points, but I'm going to really focus on the things that are actionable. Because some things are soft, you know, sort of a little softer and squishier and more theoretical, and other things are very practical. So you're going to have absolute action steps you can take when you go back to your organization that you can put into practice immediately.
Awesome. Enough the chit-chat. Let's jump into the meat of the episode.
All right. If you want to ask Adam 2 or Adam 1 and I any questions, jump onto Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit Group and ask away. So, Adam, let's talk about creating customers that stick. So what's the framework, the process, or the steps at just an extremely high level, we'll get into granular detail in a minute, that you apply to every single business that you get in contact with in order to set them up to generate customers that stick, whether that's generating referrals, upsells, testimonials, longer lifetime values, the list can go on. What's the process at that very high level?
Okay, so it's five steps is the way I look at it. And the first one is mission, vision, values, that whole set of philosophical underpinnings. What are you about? What is your organization about? What are you trying to do? Second is leadership and culture. Because without leadership and without a culture that supports a customer-centric attitude, as we already mentioned, you can't execute. If you don't have the culture that underpins it, you're never going to deliver great customer experiences. Third thing is understanding the customer experience, or the hero class journey, as we like to call it, which is understanding that every touch point makes a difference and understanding the journey that your customers go through from beginning to end with your organization and how that impacts them and how you can design that and implement that to actually make that an experience that's going to resonate with them and create loyalty. Fourth thing is a little boring, but it's incredibly important. It's infrastructure and systems. It's having the resources and the processes and procedures in place to actually deliver. And nowadays, you know, we talk a lot about technology. You see how important that can be. And the fifth one is the one that is near and dear to my heart and is often overlooked, and that is training and the reinforcement of that training over time. Because so many important parts of customer experiences are the human parts. They're the high, you know, what we call high touch, or the human-to-human interactions. And often where those fail is in training. If you don't have a trained staff, you're not going to have a staff that can deliver those experiences. So those are the five stages.
That's hilarious. I was talking to someone about businesses and growing businesses, what was it, 2 weeks ago. And I actually think that these were 5 out of 7 points that he raised as being the critical things in order to grow a business. So it's so funny that everything just overlaps. Like, we're talking about creating customers that stick, and it's basically core business fundamentals 101, right? So I actually can't wait to get into this. I love that we've got such a high framework. So what I want to do, Adam, is we'll jump into that lower layer, but we'll walk it through with a bit of an example, if that's all right. Just so everyone playing at home can sort of understand and go, okay, that's how it relates. So the example I've got is, I like to call most business owners a technician, right? So they're a subject matter expert. So let's say we've got a bookkeeper who's running a bookkeeping company and he's got a couple of employees, right? It's kind of a dull industry, and it's kind of what most businesses just think is a checkbox. When we get a bookkeeper, we're good. So just imagine that I'm a bookkeeper and I've got a couple of employees. How would you walk me through this 5-part framework to ensure that I have sticky customers and to make sure that I've got every single one of these things in check?
Well, you are talking actually about a topic that is near and dear to my ulcer, which is accounting. So my undergraduate degree was in accounting, so I know a little bit about this, but I quickly realized...
Made it too easy for you.
Quickly realized I was not born to be an accountant, so not necessarily. So let's talk about that. So we'll take a bookkeeper. So mission and vision, and you know, this is something that can be really important for somebody, for any organization, no matter what size. I mean, an example of one is, I wrote down Starbucks so I'd have it, it's to inspire and nurture the human spirit, one person, one cup, and one neighborhood at a time. All right, so that's Starbucks. That's an example of a high-level vision statement, mission statement. So if you're this bookkeeper, what is it? Is it to get everybody's taxes, you know, well, they're not an accountant, a bookkeeper. You know, is it to get everybody's books done on a timely fashion? Is it to make sure that their customers always feel secure and can trust the results you give? You see, you can take it a little bit higher, right? You can take it to a level that's past just the execution. And in fact, I don't have it with me, but if you go back and look at Apple's vision statement under when Steve Jobs was there and what it is now, you can see the one under Steve Jobs was much more sort of, you know, ephemeral and sort of laudatory. And the one they have now is actually very sort of mechanical. It's about we design the best products and those kinds of things. So I think you want to make a choice, but either way, you want to know, what are we about? What is our, you know, this, you can look at this as partially your brand promise, right? What is your brand promise to your customers? Are we always responsive, right? Are we always, you know, accurate? Do we always take care of our mistakes and things like that? And if you do that, you can hone in on your priorities. And I think that's one of the most important parts about having a vision or a mission, is it says what your priorities are, because we all have too much to do, right? The title of the podcast, More Time, More Profit. The time thing we can all relate to. There's too much to do. And if you don't know what your priorities are, then you're going to get lost. You're going to not always focus on the right things. And I think having a vision can help that.
That's awesome. So when you would bring sort of your vision and your mission, do you just, as a bookkeeper, I slap it up on the wall, make sure my customers can see it so they think that we're super groovy like Google, and that my employees can come in and they just reread it and they've got nothing else to read, and so they just read it and sort of absorb it? Or is there a little bit more to sort of posting our values, our vision, our mission? Or is it just something that we kind of do once and put away?
Definitely don't do once and put away. As far as how to promote it externally, I don't have a lot of strong opinions on that, but I will talk about how you can use it internally. I mean, I think it's important for your customers to know what you're about. And if you can put your vision statement on your, you know, website or whatever, or sort of part of your onboarding, that's great. I don't know if you want to throw it in their face every day. But internally, this is your credo to live by, right? Coming here from the States, you know, this is your declaration of independence. It's what you believe in, right?
You know, we'll let you use it.
It's who you are. So internally, yeah, I think you always want to be reinforcing the vision and the mission. And I believe, I don't know if they still do it, but I mentioned Starbucks earlier, they actually had either part of their vision or their motto is sewn into the inside of those green aprons, believe it or not. You don't see it as a customer, but it's actually there for the frontline employees.
Now, is that just a matter of just sitting down and saying, this is our mission or this is our vision and things like that, and we get a customer complaint or there's some customer not happy about us, and we go back and we say, look, we've done everything based on our vision, our mission, our core values, and we're pretty good by this. Or did we slip up a little bit on that and then therefore we're in the wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it's more of a conceptual framework. I think sometimes what you're referring to, Adam, is you're actually getting into your what your actual processes are, what that execution of that vision is, which is where we're in step four, where you're going, okay, what are we supposed to do in this situation and what did we do? I think when you maybe sort of step back and it's a little bit larger scale, like how did we treat this person? How did we perform in general? Or were we living up to our values in how we executed? I think then you're really sort of balancing yourself against the mission statement and vision, if I understood the question correctly.
Beautiful. So we've got our mission, our vision, our core values, and we've got our priorities set about what we're interested in. What about leadership and culture? Let's jump onto that.
Okay, so here's my saying, which is this. A leader cannot make a culture, but they can break a culture, okay? To have a great culture, the leader has to represent the values of that culture. Now, that is not enough. There's a lot of things that go into building a culture, into making sure a culture is consistent and also individual and delivers at scale. You know, it's a lot different to build a culture in a 50-person organization as opposed to a 50,000-person organization, right? These are different challenges. These are challenges of scale. So when I do training, I do customer service training, as you mentioned, and a lot of times people come in and the question I get is, can you fix my team? Right?
Pull out the spanner.
Like, Let's discuss what fixed means, but sure, yeah, we can work on that. But one of the questions I ask when I'm onboarding the client and, you know, preparing for training and learning about them, learning about their team, especially if I'm not talking to the actual supervisor or manager of that department, I ask them this: is the manager or team leader, supervisor, whatever it is that person the most customer-focused person on the team? And if they say no, I say, well, you've got an issue right there. If you as a leader are not the most customer-focused person in the building, if you're not the most customer-centric in orientation, then you can't expect the people beneath you to be. And that's a huge part of the leadership. If you as a leader roll your eyes when a customer complains, then that's what your teams are going to do, right?
You're going to have some problems.
Right. Well, I come from retail. So my father told me a couple of pieces of advice as growing up. He said, one, neither of which I listened to, let me point out for the record here. He said, one, you can marry more money in 15 minutes than you can make in a lifetime. I didn't listen to that one. And then two, he said, never go into retail. And I didn't listen to that one.
It's funny that you say that, because I've actually been in a department before where it's a senior person, you know, someone come to them and said, they've got a problem with this customer, and they literally said something on the lines of, that's because all customers are stupid. So that might indicate a bit of a problem within that department.
Well, exactly. And we're taking that sort of an extreme example of what we're talking about right now. But when people, when my team used to come to me with a customer problem, you know, I wouldn't sit there and have a bitch fest with them. I'd talk about how the customer felt. I'd talk about how we could make it better. And I'd say that, you know, if the customer has a problem, we're the problem. They're not the problem. Now, there's a level to that, right? There are certain customers where, you know, you've got...
We've all been there. We've all got a list of clients we'd love to drop.
Right. So there's
never done that.
Right. Exactly. So there's that couple of percent that's over the top or crazy. And you have to acknowledge that with your team or you just lose credibility. But what, for the normal customer issues, for the times where customers are just upset, it could have been done better. How do you respond? What do you show them in that moment? And that's leadership. And that's when we're talking about customer centricity. That's a customer centric part of customer centric culture. And another thing, and I touched on this a minute ago, is empowerment. To me, empowerment is a huge cultural signal, because the degree to which you empower employees not only shows how much you trust the employees to do what they need to do to be able to handle customer issues in the spot, but it shows how dedicated you are to customer experience.
So with empowerment, I reckon that's an awesome point. So what's some key things that we can do as a business owner to really ensure that our team feels like we trust them or that they feel like they're empowered?
Oh, absolutely. So it's actually one of my sort of pet topics. And we've got a good guide on Customers That Stick on like a starter guide to employee empowerment. But this is exactly what I referred to at the beginning of the show, where I came from this MBA command and control type of mentality. And I realized within just literally a few months, I was like, this is idiotic. I've got people getting supervisor approval to refund $15.
Right.
Like, what am I doing? But that's what I was taught. And that's what most people are taught. And it's also there. And I teach a lot about customer psychology and cognitive biases and all these things. But, you know, it's a psychological thing. We don't want to be taken advantage of. But I soon realized that this is ridiculous. This is costing me more money. What's the half hour of my manager's time worth? What is the 15 minutes of my time worth? And most importantly, what did we do to the customer to make them have to argue about $15 or to even wait, right? So with empowerment, one of the things is there's a limit. I actually talk about what's called smart empowerment, because there is a balance. Empowerment's a risk-reward decision. And here's the other extreme example I use. You're not going to give the cashier, you know, at a retail store the ability to do wire transfers from your account, right?
Probably not the best idea.
Right. Okay. So there's a limit to empowerment. The question is, where's the limit, right? Where does it stop? It needs to be context sensitive. It needs to be relative to the position. But almost any organization I ever talk to could always empower their employees more. The tendency is to tighten up. The tendency is to accrete rules over time. You know what? Starbucks is a great example. I seem to keep coming back to Starbucks today. I don't know why. You have a lot of Starbucks in Australia?
They actually opened like 50-something of them, and 45 of them are closed because we've got one of the best cafe cultures in the world. Hashtag Melbourne rocks.
That's where Grant lives, by the way, if you can't tell.
Hashtag Melbourne rocks. I love it. All right. Well, here in the...
No, but we do. We know Starbucks.
That's awesome. All right. Well, here in the States, they've still done pretty well. And one of the reasons is this, okay? They mess up your drink, or even if they don't mess up your drink, but you tell them they messed up your drink, they don't argue. They don't say a word. They go, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, I will make you another. And they throw it in the trash right in front of you without blinking. And their baristas are empowered to do that. Why? Because empowerment can be very much tied to what's called customer lifetime value. They know the lifetime value of their customers. I've heard a few different numbers, but it's around $14,000 somewhere in there. Why are they going to tick anyone off over a cup of coffee that costs them 50 cents or less, right? It's nuts. But how many businesses do exactly that type of thing?
Yeah, no, look, I absolutely love that. I think Starbucks is such an awesome example from that perspective. So stepping forwards, I remember you were talking about next step is understanding the customer journey.
Absolutely right.
What does that look like?
Okay, so we talk about customer service and customer experience, and we don't need to get into semantics of the difference, but everybody's heard of customer experience now, and that's the idea of a total experience from beginning to end, and that your customer is interacting with your brand at numerous what are called touch points. So if we're the bookkeeper, let's go back to our bookkeeper example, because I sort of lost track of him. All right, so if we're the bookkeeper, so the first touch point is probably not a meeting. The first touch point is when the person saw a Google ad or was referred by another client, as you mentioned earlier, the importance of referrals, or saw some sort of snail mail, old school marketing, and or found them on a Google search, whatever. That's the first touch point. That's actually the first exposure to that bookkeeper's brand. And every time the customer comes in contact with that bookkeeper or their organization, that's a touch point. And that's the entire experience. So what is that first call like after they get the referral, when they call the bookkeeper? What is that touch point like? How do we answer the phone? What do we say? Are we setting up a sort of a discovery call? Are we setting up a face-to-face meeting? Okay, what does that meeting look like? What do we do? How do we pitch our product? What do we ask for from the customer to understand their needs better? So forth and so on down the line. So you look at everything as a touch point, right? And when you're looking at these touch points, you're looking at this journey, one of the things I teach is I teach a concept called pressure point. Okay, so let's say we identify sort of 30 distinct touch points. What are the ones that are the 80-20 points, right? What are the ones that make the big difference, that have the biggest impact on the customer? Well, let's focus on those first. And for any of you listening, I can't stress this enough. Look at your customer journey. Look at everything you do with the customer, every way your customer interacts with you. What are those make or break moments? Because it takes a lot of time, and people spend years sort of journey mapping and working through their journeys, small organizations, big organizations. It takes a lot of time to fix it all. I always say focus on the pressure points first. And what would you consider a pressure point? Here's what I would call a pressure point. Anything that can possibly have an emotional impact or is core to the product or service. Because one of the things we look at nowadays, and I don't know if you've heard this, the emotional customer journey. Have y'all ever heard that term?
No, I never heard it.
All right, well, okay, in that case. So an emotional customer journey is, what are your emotions throughout this? Because emotions are how we decide everything. So how we feel about a customer experience, how we feel about a company, is actually usually based on the emotions we felt in that experience, and often determined by the peak emotion we felt. So the most emotional point. And if you think about this sort of logically, let's take the science. There's a thing called the peak end rule and all this kind of stuff. But if you sort of take the science out, just think about it. If you got really mad or really wowed by a company, there's a lot of interactions, there's a lot of things you did, but you either got really angry with them or you got really wowed by them. What do you remember at the end? Those two things, right?
Correct.
Right. You remember those two things. Yeah. So one of the things when you're looking at these pressure points, when you're looking at touch points, this bookkeeper can say, okay, when we, we're sending in the monthly books. Well, how do they do that? Do they just send them a PDF or do they make...
Usually.
Right. Or do they make it an experience? Do they do a follow-up call? Do they put some sort of guide or information product with it? Do they send a personalized video? Whatever it may be. I'm sort of off the cuff here. I don't know the bookkeeping industry.
Yep. No,
But whatever it may be, have they thought about, okay, what can we do that makes us not like every other bookkeeping service? Every other bookkeeping service sends a little email with an attached PDF, probably not even attached PDF, a darn link, because they have to worry about security nowadays. So it's not even easy. They've got to go do a link and download it and all this kind of stuff, right? So what can we do to remove the hassle? Or if we're going to have that hassle, then what can we build around it to make it as pleasant as possible? What can we do at that touch point, at that key moment, that our monthly interaction, what can we do to make it as wow as possible without being ridiculous and without, sort of trying to make an over-the-top moment? Those are overrated. You don't really care about all the stuff you see on YouTube and all these, like, oh my God, that was the craziest customer experience ever. Okay, stories do not scale. All right, those are great. They're fine when they happen. They happen organically, but you're not looking for those. You're looking to always just meet or exceed expectations, okay, and do it consistently.
How do we find find out what those important things are? Is it a matter of just doing surveys or just keeping your ear to the ground, asking people? How do we actually find out that the example that you said was fantastic, because we use EcoSign with our, you know, our bookkeepers, and it used to be you used to have to sign on a piece of paper and scan it in and do all this, and then we started using EcoSign. You can just type your name and send it off as a PDF. It's amazing. And then other things, they haven't got their technology up to date. How do they extract that information out of me to say this system needs to be upgraded?
Well, first of all, always talking to customers, as you pointed out, or surveys are certainly useful, right? And anything you can do to get more information, and good information, I should note, because you can definitely get misled by asking the wrong questions or asking them in the wrong way. But yeah, anything you can do to ask the customer or find out from the customer. The other thing, especially for smaller, you know, business owners, people that just don't have a lot of resources or a lot of money to invest in, you know, having a survey firm come in or people who really know how to do it. I mean, sometimes it's just use your logic. Sometimes I use the example of like a haircut. Like the haircut, there's a few key points in a haircut that are really important, like the phone call, when you actually get your haircut, you know, checking out. And you know what they are? They're almost all of the points where somebody interacts with a human. If you don't have any other rule, this is certainly not 100% rule by any means, but if you can look at what's core to the service or where people interact with other humans, that's a good start. Okay, it's sort of a real, if you want just a boilerplate way to look at customer journeys. And here's why. We are biologically, evolutionarily designed to respond and react to other humans. And if you think of every time you've been mad at a company in your life, you know, what percent of those were had to do with a human being?
Right. All of them. Usually an ex-business partner or an ex-girlfriend, usually.
Those two, right? Well, yeah, I mean, so you'll get ticked off at a computer. You'll get ticked off when you go to check out and you've been online shopping and the system crashes, right? I mean, all those things can tick you off. It doesn't always have to be a human being, but if you look at the most emotionally resonant moments, it's going to be human-human interactions in most cases, especially for companies that have those as part of their journey. That's very key to look at.
Awesome. Now we're on the home stretch now. Can we just jump into points 4 and 5 and then we'll bring this puppy home?
So infrastructure and systems, I have a saying, which is great customer service begins with adequate resources. And I can tell you that 90%+ of the times I've failed myself in delivering customer experience or delivering customer service is because I've been understaffed or under-houred or under everything, right? You can have the best customer service team in the world, but if your customer service team is 5 people and it needs to be 10 people, then it doesn't matter, right? So when you look at infrastructure, when you look at systems, you've got to have everything in place. So infrastructure, it's funny, you just mentioned sort of capital investment, which is, okay, what is your competition doing? And what type of technology do you need to keep up? And that's always a major problem because that actually does require capital investment, requires an entire sort of process to get involved in. But you want to make sure you have the infrastructure in place to deliver the experiences. So if you go back to that vision, if you go back to that journey map, right? And you say, this is the customer experience we want to deliver. Okay, do we have the staff for it? Do we have the technology for it? Do we have the inventory for it? Are you able to do peak demand? We see this with retailers all the time at the holidays. They don't staff up enough or they don't get enough inventory and they're out of the whatever the holiday toy of the year is that everyone's buying, right? Because everybody just buys the same one. It's always like one toy that's big. Right.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always like that. Right. So all of these things. And then systems and processes. And I can't say how important this is. And I think a lot of people do a disservice by talking down like scripts and things like this. You absolutely don't ever want somebody to be scripted or robotic. But I can't tell you, I believe scripts are an important training tool and important base because it tells your teams, and we'll get into this in a second when we get to training, it tells your teams what they should be saying. Now, they should say it their own way. They should say it like a human, but they at least understand what the flow is. Processes and systems, this is absolutely crucial. So what happens when somebody calls and they get the wrong department?
I did that 3 times a day and I was completely frustrated. By the time I got to talk to someone, I just hung up on them anyway because I couldn't do what I wanted. So I was so irate, it's not funny. So this is probably fitting.
And that's either systems and processes and then training on top of it, right? Because one, you have to have the system to train. You have to have the system that people know, okay, when they call billing and it's actually a sales question, here's what I do. Not just call 1-800 number or I don't know, right? It's this. Or What happens when a customer wants to return something? We talked about that empowerment. Well, what is that process? Is there a form? Is there whatever? What happens when there's a liability issue? What is that process? If you have these systems and processes set out ahead of time without overdoing it, okay, and this is key, without having processes and procedures for every little thing, there's a balance here, and that's very important. You don't want to have people so burdened with rules that they can't act, that they can't be empowered, but you also don't want to just throw them out there and say, all right, do a good job.
Fantastic. And the final point is training. Do you just want to touch on that for a moment?
People don't invest in training. And we talked about that, the importance of the human-to-human interactions. What happens with training too often is people simply, okay, here's the manual. Here's how the computer system runs. Here's how you check out at the end of the day. And it's not enough. Okay, first of all, they don't reinforce the training over time. Second of all, they don't do customer service training, human skills training. We talked about the evolutionary biology. We are not designed for reactive service. We are not designed for somebody to yell at us and for us to smile and go, thank you, may I have some more, right? This is not how we are designed as humans. We have stuff we could talk about at another time. We have adrenaline dumps. We have cortisol. We have all these things going through our body. So training is how you overcome that, teaching people how to depersonalize, how to understand their own emotional reactions as well as customer psychology. And they're not going to just get that by, you know, being handed a manual and being shown where the keys are. So training is crucial to everything that came before it.
Fantastic. I absolutely love that framework. And I know you've been scribbling away on your notepad frantically there, Grant. What did you come up with in terms of a framework, processes, or steps that people can take into the office tomorrow and come up with customer experience? Now, my eyes have been completely opened in this episode because, Grant, you and I have lived in the Philippines for a long time. I think we both spent about 4 to 5 years there. And it's a lot of call centers, so people ringing up and complaining. But what I've taken away from Adam today is it actually starts with that first touch point when they first ring you in form of a lead or through Google or whatever it is. So it's not just after the sale's made. So do you want to take us through?
All righty then. So what I've been doing, it's going crazy. I've written down your 5 points and I've just interpreted them very quickly and short and sharp. So Adam, let me know if I deviate at all from this framework. So step one. Vision, mission, and values, right? So we really use this to focus in on our priorities. So for our vision, mission, and values, what is your overarching drive to every single client? What is our brand promise to our customers, right? It really just utilizes stories that have already occurred in our business or that we want to occur in our business. And we can use that to portray to our internal employees as well as out to our external customers. So an example for external customers is on your About Us page on your website or also referencing it when you're onboarding clients or sending out a monthly report, etc. Step two is leadership and culture. So I think an awesome quote was, a leader cannot make a culture, but they can break it. So you as a leader must be the number one most customer-centric person in the business. You can never complain about a customer. Always show employees how to think like a customer. They might have had a bad experience with their partner and have just brought it in with them. It doesn't mean they don't dislike one of your employees. You really want to also empower your employees and trust them to make their own decisions. As an example, removing supervisor approval for small decisions, but also keeping a limit based on their level. It really just creates customer and employee loyalty. Step three is understand the customer journey and experience. So a good note is your customers are interacting with your brand many, many times, even before you realize it. Things like this are through the websites, referrals, phones, emails, invoices, etc. So you always want to structure every touch point that they see. And a really good point that you mentioned as well, Adam, was realizing the pressure points. You really want to emphasize these make or break moments. Focus in on the 20% of those interactions that could result in 80% of improvements. And we can do that by ensuring that you extract a positive emotion out of every interaction. And we can always use surveys, feedback forms, or even just asking customers to really see how we can improve on that. Point four, the second last one, is infrastructure and systems. I love this, one of my favorite points. So great experience starts with structure. Review what your competition is doing and see what technology they're using, potentially scripts for training, templates such as invitations, welcome letters, etc. And then review your own to be successful. So do you have the price correct? Do you have the people to support the customers that are coming in? Do you have the inventory? Are your team supported by systems? Are your customers supported by systems? But always ensure that your team must be enabled through processes and systems, not hindered by them. And I think that was a really good point that you mentioned there, Adam. And fifth and finally is the training and reinforcement. Nobody invests in training, but they desperately need to. And I couldn't agree with that statement more. Always train and retrain and retrain. And I think the final point that you mentioned there, which was extremely valuable, was teach items that are just outside of the employee's roles. Teach them emotional intelligence, EQ. Teach them leadership. Teach them how to make notes. Teach them how to think outside of themselves. So how did I go there, Adam?
You did great. I can't believe I'm old and slow. I don't know how you kept up with all that. That's awesome.
That's why he gets paid the big bucks. And to download all the amazing examples, the brilliant frameworks and wrap-up points from this episode, go to www.moretimemoreprofit.com/058 for episode 58.
That's right. Don't forget to download all the points so that you can print off the worksheets and run through them yourself.
Adam, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. We could talk about this all day, but we can't. Can you tell us where we can go find out a little bit more about you? Website, social media, courses, anything that you wish to promote at all?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, thank you so much. This was a great discussion. I appreciate it, Adam. Appreciate it, Grant. CustomersAtStick.com, that is my home, my main home base. You can find me there. I'm all over social. You can search my name. It's pretty unique, Adam Toporek, T-O-P-O-R-E-K. But just Customers at Stick, and I'd love to connect with new people. We've got our training there, my keynote speaking, the book, Be Your Customer's Hero, all that good stuff, and would love to connect with your audience. And once again, thanks so much for having me.
And we'll put that link in the show note for everyone playing at home. We'll be continuing this conversation over at Facebook. You can go to Facebook and search for More Time, More Profit Group and join in the conversation with us there.
Thanks, everyone. Don't forget to jump onto iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and leave us a review so that we know exactly what you've taken out of today's episode.
And that's it from us. We'll catch you the same bat time, the same bat channel next week. It's bye for now.
Catch that, everybody.
You've just been listening to More Time, More Profit Podcast. For more info, check out moretimemoreprofit.com. Make sure to tune in at the same time next week for another dose of real-life business strategies.